Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hello, this is Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and I am here with another conversation episode. I don't know why I announce it like that every time. It's like, I don't know what else to say. Before we start today's episode, I have something quick and exciting to share with you. James T. Washburn is a Seattle-based trans storyteller and activist, and he has written a work called, well, Achilles and Patroclus, thus why I am sharing it all with you today. Achilles and Patroclus, along with several other 20-minute chamber operas from the Jane Lang Davis Creation Lab, will all be available to stream online from the Seattle Opera after September 10th. Achilles and Patroclus is an intimate retelling of Achilles and Patroclus' relationship from childhood to the events of the Iliad. It explores the non-linear nature of relationships and how we remember them while dealing with themes of fate and choice, the intersections of loyalty, grief, and sacrifice, and how idealism and perspective change from youth to young adulthood. The piece is a series of moments from throughout their lives, but reorganized by theme rather than linear time, much as you might remember a relationship in retrospect. The composer is Erica Meyer, and James shares that another one of the pieces that's being streamed in this series is a non-binary retelling of Icarus. So it just sounds like there's some incredible stuff coming from the Seattle Opera in September. Visit seattleopera.org for more information. James reached out to me on Twitter, and I was just really excited to share all of this with you. So to be clear, this was not an ad. It's just a really exciting thing that I wanted to share with you before today's episode. And speaking of, so today I'm very excited to give you more classical reception on the stage. That's right. I got this announcement and I've got this conversation. Today's conversation was with Danielle LaRose, who has been on the show before. She came on last year in the midst of the pandemic, where we had an absolutely wild and very difficult to edit conversation about Shakespeare's Troilus and Cressida and how it relates to Troy and the Trojan War. And that was so fascinating. This time we had a much more toned down, much less frantic conversation. And this time about the Amazons, but not just about the Amazons, about an all new retelling of the Amazons story that Danielle has written. She is an actress and a playwright and has now written a brand new full length play about the Amazons and the Amazonomachy. Honestly, I'm completely blown away by that, and it was so interesting to have her tell me all about it. So we talked about the Amazons in general, them as characters, and a bit about their story, but primarily about Danielle's take on them and why she did it, what her company is all about, and just generally the play itself, which I, for one, cannot wait until it is being staged and I can watch it in person, because it sounds incredible. I mean, it's the Amazons. So Lord knows I would watch it, but like, it really sounds so good and interesting and cool. The play will feature, and her company features exclusively women and non-binary people, and it's just really all about giving voices to the people who aren't, you know, the cis white men, which is just great. Danielle is also Canadian, so it's really cool for me too, having that kind of connection. I so rarely get to talk to Canadians on the show. And so it was just generally really exciting. We get along really well, so it was a very casual conversation, very friendly, very much just, you know, two women chatting about such an interesting and cool topic. So I'm thrilled to have you listen to it. An update on the play, because we did record this back in like May, I think. It's moving along. They did do a reading of it in Edmonton, where they're all based. I wish I could have seen it, but it is officially called The Amazonomachy. We joke a bit about what the title will be, but it is now officially The Amazonomachy, and I take a little bit of credit for that. You'll see why in the episode. If you're interested in a little more backstory on the myths of the Amazons that we're talking about, you can refer back to the episode that I did on them back in March of this year for International Women's Month. That was a great episode that covers all of these myths, basically, that are going to come up in this conversation. Conversations, writing the new Amazonomachy with Danielle LaRose. Amazons.
Amazons.
Yes. So thank you, Danielle, for talking to me again. Joining back after, like, this has to have been like a year since we last talked about, what did we talk about? Oh, Troilus and Cressida. Lord, yeah. This is about how my brain goes.
Like, hey, it was a year ago, and I think because we were both just getting into the pandemic groove, I think we were probably talking for like 4 hours.
Yeah. It was you were around great. The same time that I started talking to the Women of Ancient History fangirl too, that podcast.
Oh man, I love them.
They're the best. And we also talked for like one of the first times we recorded together, we talked for 8 hours.
Wow.
But yeah, so I think that's like, that was that time of the pandemic, you know, it was like, oh my
back
God.
Back when we were all learning how this new socializing was going to happen. And it was before that awkward time when we forgot how to socialize.
Yes.
Which happened, definitely happened. It's still happening.
Oh my God. Yeah. But yeah, you and I are back talking today because you've been working with the Amazons. And first, I guess, tell us again about your theater company and everything about that, and then we'll dive right into why the Amazons.
Absolutely. So I started acting ages ago. It's been, you know, a full lifetime, maybe 5 or 6 lifetimes, performing in classical theater, and just always being a little bit miffed that I was always playing the princesses and the women who have to live their trauma on stage in front of an audience, because that always asks actors to do the same thing, right? So it's a bit of a toxic situation for lots of female bodied actors. So I started this company called the Tiger's Hearts Collective, and we are an all women classical theater company that tries to reclaim space for women and non-gender, non-conforming folks, non-binary folks in the kind of classical tradition. And sometimes that includes doing Shakespeare plays. And plays that people are more familiar with. Sometimes that means exploring Greek tragedy, you know, stuff that isn't early modern. And now we're venturing into the realms of writing our own classical material, because they're just, yeah, we just want to be able to sink our teeth into material that's written by women for women. And when I say women, I mean like cisgender and transgender, womb-bearing women and non-womb-bearing women. Anybody who identifies in that way should feel included in those stories.
That's so exciting. I mean, as somebody who comes at mythology in general with that same kind of complaint, like I can't imagine actually being so into it as like acting and having to be in those parts yourself. So I can only imagine it would just be like incredibly frustrating and hard and unnecessary. So
I mean,
you know,
I love it, don't get me wrong.
Of course, I
got to play Clytemnestra last I suppose it was 2 years ago now, because it was just before we spoke. But you know, living in that epic skin is so exciting. But, you know, we want to be able to take it further, and we want to be able to see a huge myriad of human and feminine experience reflected in those characters. So while I love playing murderous, wronged women, it, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of a break with somebody who's a badass Amazon matriarch.
Yeah. So today we're talking about the Amazons because you wrote a play about the Amazons. And I mean, basically, I just want to hear all about that and all about the Amazons, everything you learned, everything Amazons.
I love the Amazons. I've always loved them. And they're just so amazing. Even just their names are so evocative. And it just makes you want to be in the club of those Amazons, you know? And I think I was probably in elementary school when I first, you know, watched Xena Warrior Princess with my dad. And I just thought they were so cool. And then I was in my first Shakespeare play when I was maybe like 11 or 12. And it was A Midsummer Night's Dream. And Hippolyta, of course, mm-hmm. Amazon badass queen, is in A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I was so excited to see her. And then she stood on stage for the first scene, basically silent for like 25 minutes while Theseus, head shake, eye roll, you know, all of those things, stands on there and talks with a bunch of guys about how they're going to kill this young woman, Hermia, because she loves the wrong guy. And Hippolyta has to just stand there seething, obviously. Why wouldn't she be? And I was so disappointed by this male gaze lens that was cast on one of my absolute heroines. And I never really got over that, because I've had to, Midsummer Night's Dream is like one of the most popular plays ever, let alone in early modern drama or Shakespeare. Everybody knows that play. Everybody loves that play. Everybody skates over the fact that Hippolyta is completely wronged and she probably does not want to be there. But I've had to play that part so many times, and standing on stage, being silent while that is going on around you, and there's an audience out in front of you who are complicit in that, is like, it breaks your heart a little bit, because you see those little girls in the front row and you go, I could, if I didn't have to stick to the script, I could just go, no, this is bullshit. Come on, Hermia. We're going to go back to Themyscira and have a great life. And the girls in the audience would be like, yeah, this is the play I want to see. But we're told that this is a love story and Hippolyta and Theseus love each other. And it's
Yeah.
Just no.
I'm not going to lie. So I've definitely seen Midsummer Night's Dream performed a number of times. Like mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of Shakespeare in my life. And I should add, one of my all-time favorite movies, and I did mention this to you, but I don't think you've seen it, or I feel like you'd appreciate it, though, is the 1999 or 2000 movie Get Over It, which is both...
Yes, we did have this conversation.
Oh, yeah, because I will bring it up, because that's all I think about when I think of Midsummer Night's Dream, because not only do the characters perform A Midsummer Night's Dream as a musical in the movie... Amazing. But the movie itself is a retelling in that way where they clearly were like attempting a Taming of the Shrew 10 Things I Hate About You moment.
Yeah.
And definitely didn't get the depth of 10 Things, but did get the entertainment. So maybe it actually fits because Midsummer Night's Dream is a comedy. But
is it more akin to like She's the Man 12th Night adaptation where it's where it's mostly comedy, like 90s kids, Nickelodeon kind of focus?
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. But it's like, many years, well, at least a few years, a number of years before She's the Man. So it's much more in the realm of 10 Things and Bring It On and like that kind of world. Right. And also has Kirsten Dunst because it was the year 2000 and everything had Kirsten
everything
Dunst.
Had Kirsten
and
Dunst.
Everything should. I'm not talking against it.
But yeah, so I saw Hippolyta and I heard this part and I was like, this is crap. She would never do this.
She really wouldn't. Let's just to say, like, no. Theseus abducted her, and also she was a fucking Amazon. Like, get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, the text is just, it's just crap. It's just full of lies. Just flagrant lies. Like, she always calls him my loving lord and all this bullshit.
I blocked all of this out. I can't believe it. Like, that's what I was starting to say before I got worked up and how much I love Get Over It and then forgot.
Hey, valid. Totally valid.
I just, it's the best. But it's like I really have seen this so many times and I have somehow made no connection to the Greek mythology in it. It's mm-hmm. like I forget that it's also Greek mythology, and probably because it's so absurd to suggest anything good about Theseus, let alone Hippolyta like that.
I did see one a few summers ago in London where they wheeled her on. It was at the bridge. They wheeled her on in a box, like a big glass box, and she was wearing this awful gray smock and this like little cap. So she was obviously a captive. She was obviously not happy about it. And it was the, oh God, what's her name? The actor who plays Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones.
Gwendolyn Christie.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was just,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
This big, tall, gorgeous Amazon standing in a box watching this scene happen. But of course it gets to the end of the play and you have to reconcile them and they have to be happy because we don't want to watch a Midsummer Night's Dream where everybody's not in love and so happy. And
yeah, that's disappointing because that's very cool to begin.
The initial
at least,
image
like
was really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with her. I mean, who else is an Amazon?
Right. Casting dream.
Well, that's, yeah, that's so interesting. And so, yeah. So, I mean, that all, I mean, like, through however many ways led you to write your own play about the Amazons?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that Hippolyta wasn't the only kick-ass Amazon. I wanted to get all the other ones in there. Yeah, I was so fed up with the extant material that we had in theater for women and for Amazons. So I wanted to recreate the intersectional matriarchy of my childhood fantasies and just have all of these badass women just living their lives. They're, you know, self-governing and moving around and hunting and being self-sufficient and just doing it in a classical world, because that's where I live. That's where I work. That's how my mind is. And yeah, it is a bit of a, you know, two fingers up to the patriarchy who has ruled the classical school for so, so long. So it's really exciting to just allow them to breathe and take up space. And we've got so many of them. We've got Melanippe is in there, and Penthesilea, and Phoebe is there being a you know, really cool young Amazon. There's a really nice kind of generational spread. We've got Atrera is there in like spirit form, watching over everybody, making sure that it's all going to plan and kind of talking to us, the audience. So we get to expand on this very exciting society.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, like I said, live in the club. Be
Yeah. And let them take up space. That was the perfect, that's like such a perfect way to phrase it, because it's so interesting with the Amazons, because they were so important to the Athenian like mythology.
Yeah.
And they were depicted everywhere. I learned in covering them just briefly that they're only next to Heracles in the character or like concept most depicted in Greek pottery that we know of, which is fascinating, but there's no real or like thorough extant stories about them, which is so interesting,
and yet they're
everywhere.
Leaves
it so much open. Exactly, they're everywhere, they're enormous,
and they're strong and everywhere. It's not like they're everywhere, you know, languishing because they've been defeated. No, they're around and they're threatening and they're standing their ground, and all of the like amphora that have Amazons on them that are in, there was one that of course Amazon goddess Adrienne Meyer talks about in her book, where on the one side they're fighting, right, and they're all like geared up, and on the other side they're just hanging out, bathing and doing their thing. Like they exist in a non binary kind of female space where you can be a warrior and you can also be feminine. And I think it was so confusing and alluring and probably very, you know, heartening for the women who were living in that society to have an amphora with Amazons on it and go, okay, I can do this. I can get through this day.
I often wonder whether it would have been like heartening, reassuring in that way, or more like jealousy inducing. I think it certainly would have been for a lot of women. Like, I'm sure a lot just accepted their lot in life, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that, living in that world, to just be like, this is what it is, so I'm going to, you know, appreciate it for what it is or whatever. But I definitely think there had to have been, you know, Athenian women who of all places were particularly confined to the home and particularly like property of the men, to be looking at the Amazons painted all over all the walls of the city and depicted on the Parthenon itself and on like every amphora on every street corner, and then just think like, why the fuck can't I have that, you know? Or like, I'm just gonna run off to Themyscira and, you know, live with them instead.
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of like to think that I've got like a little running fantasy in my head that when they were growing up as girls, and if they had to go through that Arctea ritual where they all pretended to be bears belonging to Artemis and like in the sanctuary, there was I can't remember which sanctuary it was, but yeah, they go through basically a rite of passage as young women where they go up into the hills and pretend to be little bear cubs and run around and are just like wild and free, kind of living out their Atalanta fantasies and pretending that Artemis is like their bear mom.
I love that.
And then they have to sacrifice their little Amazon wooden dolls, because we've got these dolls that come down to us from the archaeology, and they have to offer them up on the altar to Artemis, saying, I can't give you my maidenhood. I've got to go and get married now, but here's my doll. And it's so sad. And like, there's this quote about having to kill the Amazon in the girl. And that's what this rite was about, was, you know, getting that all out of their system so that they can go and be married and never think about it again. But I like to think that women, you know, maybe passed each other gifts or gave each other the little perfume pots or something with Amazons on them, and you know, kind of as an act of solidarity to say, this used to be us and it could be us again in another lifetime. Because what else can you do to get through a day when your life is, you know, locked in a windowless gynecium at the center of a room, just getting pregnant all day every day?
I just looked it up, and It's the Cult of Artemis at Brauron.
At Brauron. Okay.
Which is Attic, so it is in Attica.
Okay, so it's not that far away.
No, I'm surprised it's that close to Athens. But it does, like, I'm just really quickly scrolling the Wikipedia without looking into it too deeply right now, but now I want to.
Oh, it's so cool.
But it says it originates with the story of Iphigenia, which makes sense because Aulis is generally in that area as well. And, you know, the idea in some of the myths, some of the plays where she's like whisked off instead of fully killed. And then that would make sense for the origin of that, kind of from that idea of Iphigenia being sacrificed but not being sacrificed, and, you know, being allowed to live but being whisked away to Artemis instead of dying there, which is really interesting. And then to connect it to women in general, I want so much to learn more about those little, the real life aspects of things like that, the things that women did in their real lives. I just never know where to start, but this talking to people like you helps. Between you and then I don't know if you've listened to my episode with Dr. Ellie Mack and Roberts, but she talked a lot about Persephone cults. Oh my god, that like changed my whole life.
Yeah. Did you just hear my voice drop there? Because I was just like, oh yes, that was so good.
But yeah, just those little things of like real lives and the things that women did to make themselves feel better, or, you know, because they already felt good or whatever it might have been. Mm-hmm. Just like,
because it's not that different to what we do, right? We're in a pandemic situation. We're locked in our houses. We are reading books. We're watching, you know, Netflix. We're listening to podcasts and stories. We're engaging in that escapism, that thing that we're not allowed to do right now. We're doing it through, you know, imagination and connecting in different ways. So they can't have been that far removed from us so as to never be able to live out their hopes and dreams in their minds. So I like to I like to give them that from my benevolent future spot. And hey, I can write it into a play. That's fun.
Yeah.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
I often find, and this is something I'm like actively trying to let go of, that I'm too hooked on sourcing to like be able to like have my own kind of imaginative moments with real life women of that world or even just of mythology in general. I went from like barely sourcing this podcast to like being so obsessive about it that I find I can't get past the sourcing on it. And then I want to be able to have more fun with it.
Yeah. I definitely experienced that writing this play as well, because the stories that we do have, I wanted to have enough there for people to glom onto and say, oh, I recognize that story. Or I kind of, you know, I'm aware of the belt. And I'm aware of Penthesilea and Achilles, but those two encounters are so far removed in the mythology that we have, and there's so much that potentially happens in the middle that I really had a hard time reconciling what my timeline should be. And I was like, we start with Melanippe is in the camp of Theseus. She's been abducted because she's trying to figure out where they're keeping Antiope. The whole battle has already happened. They've already taken Hippolyta's belt. And we never get Antiope back. She ends up going to Athens with Theseus, of course. But I also wanted to have this moment with Penthesilea and Achilles, and Penthesilea kind of growing into her name as grief of the people, and having that huge epic story. But then I was like, do I have to include the whole battle at Athens where they go back to Athens and they have their war there? And I don't think I can fit that. So I definitely struggled against that for a long time because, like you, I wanted it to be accurate as possible and not to, you know, throw shade on the wonderful work that classicists do to follow these stories. But at the end of the day, I had to go, the story we have to know the story that we're in, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the story that we're able to tell and that we want to tell. Sure, there's a huge time gap that doesn't make sense between fighting Theseus in the beginning and fighting Achilles at the end, but it's myth, it's alive. Mm-hmm. We can do whatever we want with it, and if we're reclaiming the classics, then that's exactly what I should do.
Well, that's completely true. And the thing about the Amazons is I think they're so ripe for that. They're so ready for it because all of their stories were told to revolve around other stories. Mm-hmm. We don't have, it's not like we have Amazonian stories because they weren't even Greek. So, you know, instead it's like the stories of Theseus and the Amazons were told to make the Athenians feel as though they were strong enough to have withheld an onslaught by the Amazons. They were told by the Athenians to heighten their like military prowess mythologically. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, well, the story of Penthesilea and Achilles was told to mark the importance of Achilles in, I think it's primarily in the fall of Troy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Quintus Smyrnaeus, yeah. Which, and then of course he was rewriting kind of or retelling something that is lost, but at the same time it was still told in that sort of like epic cycle of just talking about the height of the Trojan War and everything that came along with that. So that was told to just kind of be a part of that. It wasn't necessarily to hype anyone up, which is what I do like about the Homeric epics. They weren't propaganda in the way that like Athenian mythology was.
Yeah. But Quintus did, he was super fucking extra.
Oh yeah. He was writing in, you know, in Roman period. It's just that he was working off of something that we don't have, which is what makes his work interesting. And also like, who knows what he made up and who knows, just question mark.
Right. Isn't that
story of my life is just like constantly that, like I swear the past like year, maybe 6 months to a year of this podcast has just been varied levels of me going, but what do we not have? Mm-hmm. Like what? Like what is it that somebody might've made up and that we, you know, we take as mythological so-called fact just because that's the only version we have, but who the fuck knows what was told long before that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
could go on about that bit forever. But I think that the Amazons really are so perfect for that, because it's like you get to tell their story from them versus the way they revolve around so many other stories. And yeah, I mean, like Heracles is the last one, I guess. And that was, again, just to make Heracles seem impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that they always live on the borders of the Greek reach into so-called barbarian territory, you know, how they're used as a geographical marker to kind of draw a line in the sand as to how far Greek or Hellenic control extends, but also as like a social marker to say, as an us versus them marker, saying this is what we are because we're in relief to this thing that we definitely are not, which are I would far prefer to be on the Amazonian side, like free nomadic culture where you're just roaming around and living off the land and being badass warrior women.
No, that's so true. They are just sort of this, yeah, like borderland kind of Pontus and Themyscira. And
which is a colonial story as well, like you were talking about with Nikita Gill last, or what was for me last week. But you know, that colonial story is so familiar to us Canadians, where you've got an other who are uneducated and have primitive ways of being in the eyes of the colonizer, and they need to be changed or confronted or villainized. So I definitely want to make sure that this play for Canadian audiences draws attention to the fact that even though we've got some badass women on stage, some bad things happen to them, and bad things continue to happen to women, especially Indigenous women. If you've got a female body, you know, you've got a whole lot of hell coming your way, especially if you have an Indigenous female body. So I want to make sure that the classics don't forget to bring it the other way. We get so excited about going and living in that world, and I absolutely am here for the escapism, but I want to bring it back to us as well and say, what hasn't changed in 3,000 years?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, that's so true. I think it is so important in Canada specifically to just always be reminding everyone of our colonial roots and the horror of the violence that still is perpetuated against Indigenous women all of the time.
And hopefully they feel like, you know, anybody watching the play feels like, wherever they come from, whatever their background is, whatever their experience is, feels like, hey, I could fit in with this intersectional society where I am free to be whoever I want to be, and it doesn't matter where I come from or what I look like or, you know, what body I've been given. I have a place with these people who understand what loyalty and community is. Like, I always love that about Hippolyta, when Penthesilea, spoilers, when Penthesilea kills Hippolyta accidentally when they're hunting together, how the Amazons don't necessarily have this story of her going back and being like, oh shit, everyone, I'm gonna be hunted by my own people for doing this awful thing. Instead, they go with her to Troy. You know, they back her up and they say, well, you've got this warrior atonement that needs to happen. We're going to be there for you. The runaways are going to find us. That's going to be shitty. But, you know, we're not going to persecute you for this accident, which I think speaks volumes of their community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, do you have a runaways in your play?
Absolutely.
Good.
Gotta have a runaways.
I mean, kindly ones. They need to be there at all times.
And I try and work in all of the names. Furies, runaways, kindly ones. They're all there.
Kindly ones. Eumenides, let's go straight to the Greek.
Exactly. Because Hippolytus is there as well. And they have a very, you know, intimate relationship with the Eumenides, obviously. They're just a kid. We've got some fabulous non-binary artists who are coming in and stepping into Hippolyta's shoes and just allowing that child to explore both sides of what they have. You know, they're Athenian, mm-hmm. but they're also Amazon. And I don't want to take that away from them.
Love that.
They're really cool as well. It's definitely a potential spin-off material.
Mm-hmm.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
So what is the performance situation for this? What's it called?
Well, I'm going back and forth, actually, on the name.
Okay. So it's not crazy that I didn't ask.
No, it's not crazy at all. I wanted to call it the Amazonomachy because I just think that's a radical word. And also mm-hmm. we meet them in several battles. But then I was like, oh, is that going to be too unapproachable? You always have to think it's classical. But I don't want to scare people with the name being too classical. I want it to be approachable because the story is approachable. You just have to market it as, you know, something that doesn't put you off right at the get-go. So then I was like, oh, maybe we should go with something more familiar, like the Amazoniad, if it's like the Iliad, or I don't know. I think I'm sticking with Amazonomachy for now.
I would like to support that publicly.
Right. I'll add it to the tally.
I love Amazonomachy. It is such a good word.
And it feels good to say.
It does.
Amazonomachy.
I love it. Amazonomachy.
And it's badass because if you look at that word and you go, I don't know what that word is, I'm going to look it up or I'm going to look in the program notes or whatever. It's a battle with Amazons. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And it's so much better than like, because there's a lot of mechies like mm-hmm. you know, there's the Titanomachy and then there's the Centauromachy, and Amazonomachy just sounds so much better than both of those.
Yeah
it's just, yeah, they're made for it.
As long as the title makes you want to watch the play, that's my major concern.
Seems fair. But yeah, to go back to the earlier question before I realized I hadn't asked the title of the play, what is the performance plan?
We're probably looking at fall time before we can get into rehearsals because it is a massive play. Mm. It is an epic in every sense of the word because I love epics, exciting. Obviously.
Yeah.
And being a classical theater person, I was never going to just write a play that had four characters. So I think we have 23 characters right now, some of whom are doubled. So like Hippolytus, obviously, because they're a child, they're only in one or two scenes as Hippolytus, but they're in other scenes as a young Athenian boy who's worried about their older brother going to his manhood trials and trying to figure out what it means to live in this society that purports so much toxic masculinity. And then we see them again, they come back as Cassandra, which is really cool, and deliver this whole prophecy about Penthesilea and Achilles and what's going to happen to them the next morning. So there are doublings, but it's going to be a huge cast. We're going to have to do a lot of like fight training and choreography that's going to be super cool because the weapons that the Amazons use are immense. There are just so many of them, from the war axes to the spears to the wicked shields. There's a scene where Phoebe is learning the Parthian shot, where you're riding on a horse as if retreating, but then you turn around while you're still riding and, you know, deadly, deadly shot going backwards off your horse. There's going to be a big rehearsal process, but hopefully we'll be able to get that started in the fall, depending on what openings are like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I hope so. That sounds amazing. My God. That's, I mean, epic rad. Anything is great, but Amazon's good. I'm sold.
We've got a designer who's working with us, who is spectacular, and she's looking at, you know, incorporating all of these physical elements of life, a life lived on the land that would have hugely impacted the Amazons, because we have all of these depictions of them on vases and on friezes where they're in battle, and those things are influenced by the Greeks' other adversaries, obviously. We don't necessarily have a clear picture of exactly what an Amazon looked like, if an Amazon did exist, which I definitely am of the opinion that they did exist, just not in the way that the Greeks tell us they did.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree. We're like looking at the climate of the steppe and the area of the Black Sea where they would have lived, what they would have had to hand to live on that land, and to fight on that land. And so the design element, as well as the fight choreo and just like the physical aspect of their existence, is super empowering, because women are so often removed from the land. We're not allowed to. And I'm Métis, so like all of my male family members go out hunting all the time, and it's just, there's a super patriarchal element where I was never let into that club, even if I expressed interest in it. So we're kind of, you know, kept at home. You can have your little garden with this little rose, and that's as much land-based living as you're allowed to. You can go camping every once in a while. But I'm like, no, give me the thing to skin. I want to know these things. I want to learn.
I'll leave you to it.
I want to have those skills that would allow me to live in the wild. So we're, you know, the Amazons definitely would have had those skills. So it's a great opportunity to explore how that finds its way onto stage. Got these badass skins that they wear, and of course the patterned leggings, and
ooh, yeah,
tattoos. We've got a whole tattoo ceremony for Melanipe. She gets like a tattoo in the second scene that is kind of, you know, memorializing her heroism in trying to rescue Antiope. It's really badass.
Cool. I'm just in on this. Well, that sounds absolutely fascinating. I mean, yeah.
Because how different would your classical theater experience be if you had seen a play about, performed by all women or gender non-conforming artists, in
no cis men, you
know, right? In an epic situation where the costumes were epic and the language was epic and the story was massively epic.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly can't even imagine. Like, it sounds incredible, and I'm very excited that it will exist. And in Canada, that makes me very happy. And with the connection to, you know, the reminders of the Indigenous people here too, and the colonial aspects of all of that, I think is really important.
Yeah, it's super important, especially because I have a lot of guilt being a classical artist and knowing that my bread and butter is something that oppresses people every day. You know, there are kids in school who look at the Romeo and Juliet text that they're studying and they go, I don't see myself in this. Actually, I see myself actively being oppressed in this. And, you know, that's what I've built my career on. So as an artist with Métis heritage, especially, I feel like, and that's something that I've only been able to really dig my teeth into during the pandemic, because when I was younger, I moved to Europe. You know, I lived at the heart of the empire and imperialistic attitude. And, you know, I was very, very much, my goals were all moving in that Eurocentric direction. Right. So I feel like I owe it to my community to turn those things around and say, no, you are welcome here. I have, from my privilege that I definitely have, I want to be able to create a space for you. And if you want to come and play, you are more than welcome. This is for you. If you don't, that's fine too. You know, I understand that this stuff can be irreparably hurtful to some people, but I hope that there's kind of an olive branch situation that's happening where some people who haven't felt welcome in the classics before will see themselves represented, and there might be, you know, a tiny shift even for one or two audience members or artists who have had those traumatic experiences to go, no, I belong here and I deserve to tell these stories, because myths are living things and they're only what we make them into. So I'm really excited about one day when the theater's open, getting it out in front of people. And even if it's just like, oh man, that fight was so cool, I want to learn how to wield a spear like that woman on stage. Because so often it's like, oh, well, there's a dude with a sword. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's certainly more than common. I do think, and classics is such an interesting field, and I think there's a lot of people doing really good work right now to open it up and make it less exclusionary, and yeah, just the troubling nature of it, and even just opening up the way we phrase certain things of, you know, the study of the Mediterranean versus Greek and Roman, like as if they were the only people there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's just so absurd.
Exactly. But I mean, that whole area, which is now Turkey and Iran and all of that area around the Black Sea, we've got so much really cool, you know, religions based on Earth Mother goddesses and female characters that do make their way into Greek mythology, like Medea. Who really kind of represent for that region and go, no, we're badasses and we're women that aren't necessarily contained within the parameters that are set by the Greek world. Mm-hmm. Silence of the Girls was my life during Troilus and Cressida, because I was just like, how do I reconcile all of the shitty things that are happening to this character?
Yeah.
I mean, it's still really useful, because like at the very end of the play, obviously Penthesilea goes to Troy, right? But we don't see her. We don't see her interacting necessarily with Priam and with the patriarchal structures at Troy. She has a council with Hecuba, where Cassandra comes in. So her and Hecuba talk queen to queen and say, you know, our losses have been massive. And you just coming through that gate, like that whole bit of text from Quintus Murnaeus about that, is it Tisiphone? that's talking about watching the Amazons come in and saying, you know, women are not, are not cast in diverse molds as men. We breathe the same air. We're made of the same stuff. So I want to go and fight with this queen who's in front of me, who's coming to fight for my city, when she doesn't owe us anything. So yeah, she, Penthesilea, comes in, has this very moving council with Hecuba, who will be played by the same actress who plays Hippolyta, who she's just killed. So it's kind of this moment of finding her sister in another matriarchal figure in her life, who needs something of her, desperately needs something. And there's this kind of confluence between what the Amazons are suffering after having lost Antiope, after having lost Hippolyta, knowing that they're probably going to suffer severe casualties by participating in the Trojan War, but having the Trojan women also come to them, like, on their knees, saying, we need you to be here for us so that we can have, so that we can know that even if that doomsday does come and we are enslaved by the Greeks, that we have that image of you standing in confidence and solidarity with us to kind of carry you through, just like we were talking about with the amphora, and the images of Amazons on vases to kind of help. If you've got a neighbor woman who has just gotten married way too young, and she's, you know that she's going to be going through that process as a young wife of, you know, just trying to produce a son no matter what. Probably in horrible circumstances, going to your next door neighbor and going, you know what, you need this. You need this, mm-hmm. this Amazon decoration in your life to remind you that you've got it in you to persevere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I love that. That's really interesting, having Hecuba there. Well, I mean, honestly, that sounds so completely fascinating. I'm thrilled that you've written a play about the Amazons, that they get like their voice in this way. And yeah, thank you for coming on to talk about it. It's yeah. so fun.
Thank you for
so
having
exciting.
Me. Thank I mean, you. I just want everyone to come and sit in the Amazonian camp with me and learn how to do a Parthian shot and, you know, pass around the very strong wine that they're said to have drank and
have a good time. I mean, I would fucking love to. I wonder if you'll be able to screen it at all, or whether it'll just be live.
I think this is probably going to be one where we're not going to do, because we did that Zoom reading of Troilus and Cressida last year, mm-hmm. which was great. But I think this is one that you'll want to feel it in the room. You want to feel all those, you know, that feminine energy filling the space, and all of those mm-hmm. all of those bodies taking up room. So we'll probably, if we manage to get it on stage with all the restrictions, we'll probably work towards doing a filmed version, but that my number one goal is to bring it around with mm-hmm. actual people, so you can come and share yeah. that space together, because I think yeah. it's important to have things where, I mean, it's not a play just for women, for sure, but a place where people in communities can gather, because we've been so deprived of that. And I think this intersectional matriarchal society can be very healing, bringing us together and just giving us a cool place to hang out in a cool world.
Yeah, I agree. And theater really is so meant to be live, you know?
Mm-hmm. To have those yeah, voices, I'm a musician, so having those voices in the space is something that I really miss, just sharing those vibrations.
It's honestly also exciting, so I'm thrilled to have had you to come talk to all of us about it. And I'll make sure to update my listeners whenever you have like a plan, you know, if I can manage to force myself into Alberta. I would love
no,
to see it
No, you don't.
Live.
Don't worry about it. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Don't worry about that. We'll come to BC.
But I'm like, I want to see it on like the first night, because that just seems right. So,
and who knows? We have. I mean, theater has changed so much. We've got most of our theaters here in Edmonton are all equipped with full film set, camera crews, boom mics, all that. There's a lot of kit to record yeah. things. So who knows?
Well, I hope all of the best because it sounds incredible and important.
It'll be fun. And, you know, you were a big part of that because listening to your podcast and doing my gardening and doing my things and here and there and listening to all of the fabulous people that you speak to, you know, this is Let's Talk About Myths, baby, is like its own little Amazonian matriarchy where everybody just comes and they speak their mind and they do their thing and they're just awesome about it. It's just in a podcast tent realm. So good for you.
Thank you. That's like one of the nicest things anybody's ever said about this show, so I appreciate it.
I think it's really important. Really important and meaningful. Yeah. Yeah. Nice to have you in our ears if you haven't heard that from any listeners lately.
Oh, thank you. It's funny. It's just such a very bizarre space to exist in of podcasting. Mm. Thank you again so much for doing this. Honestly, like, it's just been so much fun and so interesting, and I'm thrilled to hear about this play, which I will just assume is going to be called The Amazonomachy because that's the best
name. I think now that you've given it its stamp of approval, Liv, it's going to be called The Amazonomachy.
I would really appreciate that. I really would. It's the best. Such a good word. I love it so much.
It's so fun to say.
Thank you, Danielle. This has been so good.
Thanks, Liv.
Oh, nerds, thank you all so much for listening. I've put the link to Danielle's company, Tiger's Hearts, in the episode's description, so you can check that out. And stay tuned, because as soon as we have updates on when this play will be staged, I will be letting you all know, because I will be eagerly looking forward to it myself. Thank you all so much, as always. It's truly wonderful to be able to do this and to have these conversations, and I just love it. Thank you. I am Liv, and I love this shit.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.